Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. Today we're talking about housing, and we have a very special guest, Carl. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Doug. Thank you for having me back.
And another guest.
Yes.
Who's not that special, apparently.
And we have a normally special guest host, Rusty. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Doug.
And yeah, it was like the old days kind of getting set up. So we tried to do the sound check and it didn't work. I had to reboot everything. But this, I think everything's working now. And I'm looking at like our microphones, and you and I, Rusty, we have the normal size microphone, but it looks like Carl's like microphone foam thing. It's bigger than ours. It's like he's happy to see us.
He's trying to compensate for something, I think.
Yeah.
Mine looks longer. Your guys looks wider. I don't know which is more important. I guess it depends on who
you're. A little girthier, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine's like, it's like a tuna can over here. Super short, but very wide.
Some people like that.
So today we are talking.
This went off the rails quickly.
Wait till they get to the sound check. Listen to the sound check.
Okay. So we'll leave all this in. I mean, this is what it was like when we were trying to record before. It's just like, boom, immediately. So we're talking housing today. And the thing is, ongoing joke whenever you were on the show, Carl, is like, oh, yeah, I got a housing project going on. You're like, never again kind of thing. And you are currently building a house from scratch. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So that's a great opener. We have a lot to cover today. So you're building a house from scratch. We'll get into like why you're doing it, the cost, and how you're actually financing it. Interest rates are much higher than when we started the show in 2021. And then Rusty, you have experience like renovating two homes, correct?
Yep.
And I have zero interest in either one of those things. So it's perfect topic for you guys to go back and forth. I have some interest. So this is going to be a fun one, and I'm really glad you're both here. So I think if we don't have any other like preliminary things to get into, we could ask Carl why he did this. So anything from you, Rusty?
I think that sounds good.
Anything from you?
Nope.
So many times you said, hey, I'm not going to do house projects again, but I think maybe you enjoy it a little bit and that's how you ended up here. But why did you decide that you were going to rebuild a house?
Ooh, so this was never our original plan, but the original plan that Mindy and I did have was to move out of our current house after our kids left. Our youngest one is a sophomore in high school. So we wanted to downsize. Our current house is like 4 beds, 4 baths. We don't need something that big, and I want as much house as I need and no more. So let's go on the Wayback Machine. That you know the noise I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
Way back to 2022, we're walking around the neighborhood. We see this neighbor being moved out. We knew this lady was like 92. Her handyman happened to be outside, so I asked him what was going on. She's like, she's going to the old folks' home. They're going to sell this house in like a month or two. So I'm like, here's our card. Here's our information. If they want to do an off-market deal, let us know. And we've tried that like 20 times in our life, and never once has anyone called us back. These people called us back and said, sure, we'd love to sell the house to you. I'm like, what do you want for it? We agreed on a price and bought this thing. It's about half the size of our current house. So we thought it would be a great house to retire to. The one bad thing about the house is it has a really awful floor plan, awful design. We called it the Frank Lloyd Wrong House. You two both got the joke. Sometimes I tell people that joke and they look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright? They're like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, the greatest American architect. Anyway, Googled if you don't know who Frank Lloyd Wright is. So we fixed up the Frank Lloyd Wrong House. We weren't ready to move into it. We turned it into a rental, did a little bit of superficial renovation, with the plan that we had renovated further after our kids moved out and we were ready to move into it. But we couldn't figure out what to do with the house. One weird thing is it's built on slab, so it's kind of hard to rearrange it without breaking into the concrete to redo the plumbing. The house had also really bad systems in there, like the windows were shot, the roof was shot, all the plumbing leaked in certain places under the concrete. The HVAC system needed to be replaced. So I was lamenting all this to my neighbor, and he's like, you should just tear that thing down. I'm like, Ray, that sounds like a really awful idea. I know people who've built homes, and people almost get divorced over the whole thing. There's lots of strife and conflict. That sounds absolutely horrible. And I dismissed the idea outright for the most part. It lit something in the back of my brain. I'm like, you know, that seems kind of interesting, but there's no way I'm ever going to do it. a short time after that, we visited Leif, and who has been on the podcast before. Doug, what episode was that? Physician on Fire?
Yeah, probably 69.
69, that's what I was thinking too. Is this episode 420? Anyway, and he had built his own house. I'm like, Leif, this is really cool. And I talked to him a little bit about that. I'm like, you know what? I still think it's a horrible idea, but I'm not going to do it. Then I visited these other friends who hadn't built their own house, but have done super extensive renovations. And Jason and Shayna in Arizona, shout out to you, y'all. Have you met them before?
Yeah, yeah. Their house was super awesome.
Yeah, we went there. I forgot. We went there when we were down in Arizona. And I started talking to them about this plan. I'm like, you know, my neighbor thinks I should level the whole thing and start over. And I saw Leif's house. And then they're like, why would you not do this? Like, this seems like a no-brainer. Like, if that house is nowhere close to what you want, you should totally do it. So then I'm like, you know what? I'll start considering this. And it probably took about a year, maybe a year and a half of thought before I decided to do it. I had to be confident. I lined up the right people and a good design for the house. But that is basically the whole story. We ripped down the one that sat there on August 1st, started building the new one around September 1st. And it's like halfway done now. And yeah, that's it. This is something I never thought I'd do in my life. I used to make fun of people who scraped houses, and now I can make fun of myself because I've just done it. Here I am.
I know part of your plan, Carl, was to get a GC and, you know, have them line up the subs and not do too much of the work yourself. And I also know Mindy was kind of really pressuring you to not do too much of the work yourself. How has that aspect of things been going?
Yeah. So when I first told Mindy about this, she said, no, this is a bad idea. And then she's like, well, she eventually came around. She's like, this is a great idea, but I am not doing anything. She's the smarter one in this relationship, obviously, because the current house we live in now still isn't quite done. I still need to put doorknobs on. Rusty is poke fun at me, which you should. So Mindy's like, I am not doing anything. Do not expect anything of me. And I don't think you should expect anything of yourself either. So that's pretty much what we've been doing. There's been a couple exotic systems I wanted to put in the house that were ungodly expensive to pay someone to do. So I've done that, but otherwise I've been hands off. And the stuff that I really know how to do well, like tile and some of the cosmetic stuff, trim, I can do all that. I'm going to outsource the whole thing. So I go in there for short periods of time and do stuff, and then I'm pretty much out of it.
Do you have a doorknob guy lined up? Or
Do you have one, Rusty? I need one.
Maybe you could go over and watch them install the doorknob so you can see how it's done.
I do know how to do it. I just don't enjoy it. Do you know how to do doorknobs, Doug? Do you want to know how to do doorknobs? I'll show you some YouTube videos. I'll pay you like $5 a knob.
I don't know, but I know there's a couple holes you got to do. So
yeah,
a little bit tougher. Some chisels.
I'm down to like three of them, so I'm very close.
How long would you say how often are you on site? Is it daily or is it?
I'm on site every day, but not because I have to be. I just love the whole process. I love seeing what the guys are doing. I love talking to the framers. That's where it's at now. It's all framed in. The windows are in. It's weathered in, but I love going in there and seeing the progress. This morning, I went over and moved 2,000 pounds of tile with my own hands. That was unpleasant, but it was a good workout. Now I don't have to go to the gym. So I am there every day, but I hardly put any time into it at all. And when I do put time into it, it's mostly planning. Like yesterday, I spent 2 hours trying to find a freaking shower pan, a couple shower pans for the house that fit like an unconventional space. So the exotic systems I'm doing a hydronic floor. We won't get too much into this because people don't care, but a hydronic floor is a heated floor. So all the heat will come up through the floor. And I got quotes for that. They wanted like $120,000. And then I priced out the materials, and the materials were like $18,000. And it turns out there's companies online that if you buy the materials from them, they will design the whole thing for you and send you the manifold, which is the most complex part. So I just did that. It's actually been super fun. You got to figure out all these PEX runs underneath the floor. So it's kind of like a puzzle that you have to solve. To be clear, I don't think I'd want to do it again, but it's been super fun to do it. The other high-end system I'm doing is an ERV. Have either of you ever heard of that? Okay. The house is going to be super tight, so you need a way to exchange air from the outside to get fresh air in the house, and that's what this will do. And it does it in such a way that it takes the temperature of the air that's inside and exchanges it with the outside air, so you're not throwing warm air outside in the winter or cold air outside in the summer. It takes the condition of the air that's inside, takes the temperature from it, and puts it into the incoming air. So I'll be installing that system as well, maybe the heat pumps.
I think we may have something like that because this is a newer house. So it is pretty tight and we have like a fresh air system in here, but I don't know if it's as sophisticated as yours. It might be, it kind of goes through, I mean, I'm pointing at it right now. It's kind of goes through the system there. So pretty cool. And the heated floor stuff is pretty neat. Now I do want to go back to the shower pan thing. And you said unconventional showers, and you told me you had to find one that it's like a shower for like 7 to 8 people. And I thought that's a weird way to measure it. Like why so many folks?
I guess we're getting ahead, Doug. I was going to have you both over for my big housewarming party and shower warming party and golden shower party. I think that was your suggestion, Doug. I don't think that's a step too far.
I heard a similar thing about the beds. Like they can get like 6 people in their master bed. I was like, what kind of parties are going to be happening here?
Okay.
I didn't know about the shower.
It's a Colorado king.
That is a true thing. So Doug, we've all talked about the chili pad, and I don't sleep all night unless I have a specific mattress. So what we're going to do is we're going to get 2 full-size mattresses and put them together and make one massive bed. Mindy will have her own. We'll have our own sheets. If we ever get into a fight, we can just separate them a little bit so we put some distance between us, or I can move one into the basement. But yeah, the bed's going to be like 9 feet wide or something like that, whatever, 54 times 2. Yeah, so we will have a supersized bed. You can see it when you come over for the house golden shower warming party. I hope there's no children listening to this.
Not anymore. We mark it as explicit, but we do get a lot of complaints on that. So I'll have to put an extra warning at the beginning of this one. All right. So it sounds like things are going along pretty well. What hiccups did you run into? Like what things came up?
Ooh, the biggest hiccup was just trying to secure all the permits. We're in Boulder County and they're a little bit more stringent than maybe a rural location in the US. So I had to certify that the house had no asbestos. I had to certify that most of the material or a lot of the materials were going to be recycled when we tore the original house down, which I quite appreciate. And to be clear, we salvaged as much as we could too before we even tore it down. Took months and months to get the permits approved. So this whole project was supposed to start like March or April, and it didn't start till August just because of how long the permits. But since then, knock on OSB, everything has been going super well. It's been way better than I thought it would be. I didn't think it would be bad. I wouldn't want to do something that causes me anxiety in life, but this has been going great. It's been so fun trying to figure out these small puzzles like the floor and the ERV system and some of the finishes and do all that. And to work with friends, like I've queried all my friends who live in houses they like. I'm like, what did you do in your house that you really appreciated? I know I've been over to Rusty's house because Rusty has a beautiful house, which we'll talk about in a moment, and was asking Rusty all these questions about their cabinets, their floors, and I could tell you probably as much about Rusty's house. Your beautiful toilets. I loved your toilets.
Yeah.
I didn't take it for a test drive because I hadn't had Taco Bell the day before and I didn't have to do a number 2, but I kind of, we were over there that one time after a hike. I'm like, I just peed. Like, how do you flush this thing? Like, do I have to like, is there a handprint or some optical authentication? But there was just that button off to the side or something, but I took, you said I should download the app and configure it with my own profile and upload some stuff, but I don't want to go through that. So I eventually found the button. Did you struggle with this, Doug? Was Rusty's toilet easy for you to flush? And to be clear, I'm going to a similar toilet in my own house. I think they have little nightlights on them. And
the built-in bidet, yeah.
Yeah. One cool thing. We're going off on a disgusting tangent here, but when you sit down on this toilet.
I think it's necessary. Anytime you're on the podcast, Carl, I feel like this. And then I think after that, we'll cover asparagus pee. And then, you know, it's like we've batted for the cycle.
Doug, one thing about these toilets I'm going to put in, and your toilets probably do the same thing. When you sit on the toilet, the toilet detects that you're sitting on it, and it agitates the water. So if you have a really, you might see where I'm going here. If you have a really violent number 2 and sometimes it gets
splatters.
Yeah, and then you flush and it's still there, so it agitates the water to prevent that from happening. Like,
smart.
Isn't that crazy? Like, who says life isn't great when we have stuff like this in our life? Like, life is wonderful.
Man. I need that. It makes me think of like I used to love going to water parks, but it's like a water slide where the water is just like constantly flowing. So if anything gets over there, yeah, it just comes on down.
Or when they're in like the high dive on the Olympics and there's like the little spray of water that's like agitating the surface. Yeah. So it's not as much surface tension. Or I don't know why they do it, but yeah.
Well, I'm going to have AI in the toilet. I'll be able to talk to it. It's going to analyze my stuff. It's going to be awesome. A little therapy session while I'm doing my business.
Yeah, we stopped. There are like some very disturbing features that you don't want to get when you get the fancy toilet. So we made sure we didn't have some of those. Like one of them, it's like anytime you walk by, it will lift the seat up or it will lift the lid up. It's like, hey, I see you're walking by a toilet. Do you want to pee? I'm going to make this as inviting as possible. And I was like that. I mean, not every time I walk by my toilet is because I need to pee. So I don't need the lid coming up every time.
Was that a character in like Pee-wee?
Oh yeah,
Pee-wee Herman's Pee-wee's
Playhouse.
Yeah, yeah, right. Definitely. Yeah, that was a character, right?
Like right. The, yeah, the talking toilet. And it had like a little fuzzy like
yeah.
warmer on it too.
Classy. Yeah. Very classy. Okay.
Carl, like how's the financing portion of this going? Like how did you finance it? I know you obviously have your current house as well. So I don't know if that plays into the discussion.
Yeah. So we are doing the buy, borrow, die strategy. And I didn't even know I was doing that until I stumbled upon a Reddit post where someone talked about this. But we looked at getting a construction loan, and that's painful because the rates are pretty high and you have to have like the bank come out and inspect your thing, and that causes backups and delays. So I didn't want that. We considered just doing a refi on our current house to get money out, but our interest rate's like 2.75. I don't want to touch that rate because it would go up to like 6. So what I'm doing is I'm borrowing against my post-tax portfolio, which I think the rate is like 4.75 now. It'll probably be 4.5. What day are we recording? December 10th. I think there's supposed to be another rate cut. So, and the money is instantly accessible. You go on there, do a draw, and the money shows up in your account the next day. It's a super low rate. The one risk is you could be margin called if you borrow too much and there's some calamity with the stock market and the equities that are backing up your loan take a big dump. I think that's the theme of this. Maybe we're dumping to the thing. So I'm borrowing all the money against our post-tax portfolio. When we sell our current house, we probably have $400 to $500 in equity. We will pay most of it off. And we'll gradually sell off investments to pay it off. But I mean, I'd rather borrow at 4.5%, 4.75, than sell a bunch of stocks and pay 15% in capital gains.
So I talked about the buy, borrow, die the first time I was on Mile High Fi, and it apparently turns out that people are like super interested in this topic. So just asking a little bit about the nuts and bolts. So like what institution or bank are you using to do this?
We are with Robinhood.
Okay, yeah. I just looked that up because the episode with Pete just aired and he mentioned Robinhood as well. And yeah, those rates, the rate that you quoted was the rate I saw on the website. And that's a great rate. That's so much better than pretty much any other rates out there right now. I think Robinhood must be, they're trying to like start this aspect of their business. So, I mean, they're trying to beat everyone out there.
Yeah, it's great. The other super interesting thing about Robinhood is they had a 3% transfer deal. So they would give you 3% of your portfolio to move your money over there. So they gave like $51,000 with.
Is there an upper limit on that or?
No, I don't think so. It's crazy. I heard of people moving like $10 million and getting like, what would that be like?
$300,000?
Yeah, $250,000, $300,000.
Yeah.
How long do you have to keep it in?
It's 5 years, but it's they prorate it. So if you wait a year, it's an 80% clawback for any money you take out. And if it goes above the amount you transferred in, you can take that out. You just can't take money out if it goes below the amount you transferred in. So it's like a little game, but I enjoy those games too. Mm. Who did you use, Rusty?
We used Morgan Stanley, which is like a whole saga. But at the time, it was like the rates were really low and they were doing fixed rate loans on them. So we got in with them. Now our new credit that we take out with them is variable. So it's higher. I think it's over 6.5% right now, but we are kind of locked in with them because we have those earlier ones that were like 7 year to, it was like 2.45% is what we were at. So Those are like pretty great.
It's weird. I think a lot of maybe folks a little bit younger than myself are, which is a lot of people are anchored on the low rates we had 5-10 years ago, like 3%. But what we have now is pretty normal.
Right.
So if you can lock into that, and it's still way cheaper than paying taxes on investments you would sell.
Right.
So I don't see any reason not to do it. The other risk for me is if rates go up, my rate is variable. So that would go up as well. Mm-hmm. And then we'd probably just pay it off more aggressively.
So you mentioned the margin call that you may run into. Can you talk about what people need to think about so that they stay in a safe zone, even if the stock market dropped like, whatever, 40%, say?
Yeah, I would just stay far away. Like, they tell you how much you have to go before a margin call. So we have backup plans for backup call, backup plans for backup plans. So if we ever got close to that number, we have a HELOC on our current house. We could just take money out and transfer it to that or sell some. We could do a 72T. I would stay very, very far away from the edges of that. Like, we don't want to. I think we probably had maybe 1.2 available to us, and I don't want to do any more than 600,000. So there's a large margin for a drop. We actually did this once before a while ago, and then Elon Musk went nuts and Tesla stock dropped, and we got pretty close to being margin called at the very bottom. It didn't happen, but we got close to it, where if we didn't transfer money, we would have had to pay it. And it's shocking. I'm like, we're never going to get close to the margin call. And then there it was when your stock gets cut by like half or whatever.
Right.
Is that when you bought this house, the one that you tore down?
Yeah. Tesla stock took a big drop maybe at the end of 2023 or something like that. So it was a couple of years after.
So you'd bought the house with a,
yes,
being a margin loan.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. To clarify, yeah, we'd bought our other house with margin too. Back then it was great. It's like, hey, money. Back then it was like 1%. I'm like, oh, this is like free money at this point.
Right.
$500,000 to buy this house, and then we're paying like $5,000 a year to hold the house.
Yeah. Man, I know you said you might pay off some of it, but will you let some of it ride too, you think? Just carry that loan, and then,
yeah,
we had a whole nother episode with Doug where I talked about the benefit of the delta between the 4% loan rate, 4.5% loan rate, and the 10% S&P 500 historic returns. So
yeah, I completely agree with that. If rates stay low, like, why not? I might even borrow more. I think later in the show we're going to talk about a possible second home, and I would use it for that too, as long as we're in a good place. We're in a super good place right now.
All right. And before we move on, just with the buy, borrow, die, can you just share what banks you use?
Morgan Stanley.
Yeah. Okay. And then you're Robinhood.
Yes.
Okay. Because people are always curious about that. So just to reiterate, and then any other details that you want to share without going like super deep, but...
Yeah. I mean, Morgan Stanley is asset under management. They charge that fee. And I went to them and their rates were so good for the SB locks. I was like, I really want to use you guys, but I'm not, like, asset under management is a deal breaker. I'm not doing that. And told them, I was like, I'm buy and hold. I'm index fund investor. I don't need any management, or, you know, I don't need you guys to do any active management. And so they were like, well, let me see what we can do. And they went and got an exception. So we're with Morgan Stanley, which is an asset under management advisor, but we are not paying any asset under management fees.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Doug, I'll add one thing to that real quick. These banks, especially if you're moving a large sum of money to them, you can negotiate with them. So I would always do that. Yeah. Like, call the bank and say, I'm thinking about doing this. What can you do for me? I know Schwab has done that. Apparently Morgan Stanley has. So yeah, always negotiate.
And then we kept all the benefits of being with them though. Like, we get, like, they have a reimbursement for an Amex Platinum card, which is like $700 a year fee. Nice. Wow. So if it's linked to your Morgan Stanley account, as soon as that, you pay that fee with your Amex card, $700 deposits in your Morgan Stanley checking account. Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff, but I was like, oh, this is, anyways, it's nice to take advantage of some of the perks of being a wealthy person. And it's weird too, because I think in FI, we're so accustomed to living our middle class lifestyles. But I mean, if you get to FI, you're a wealthy person. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you're more than $1 million net worth typically. So yeah. Anyways, it was pretty nice. And then, yeah, it was interesting to, like, what Carl said. I was like, oh, you actually can negotiate with the big banks. You think, especially as like an individual, you don't have much leverage, but the actual individual advisors want to get, if you're saying you can move millions of dollars over to them, they start to salivate a little bit and they're like, well, let me see what I can do for you. So that was an interesting experience.
Very good. Okay. Let's move on. And Rusty, we mentioned that you renovated two homes, and sounds like a lot of work, but there's specific reasons why you did that. And we'll dig into the details. So I guess let us know, like, the two places, and then we could dive into the details.
I've talked about it on the show before that we have the two places. So, but I mean, very briefly, like we bought our Boulder place after we retired for about like 8 months and then bought a place in Breckenridge 5 months after that. And that was when the interest rates were super low and we were trying to basically take on as much debt as we could at that moment, because we were locking in like 2.7 and 2.55% 30-year mortgages. And part of that strategy was buy both houses and then renovate them using the SB lock, using the line of credit. And so we took out those 7-year fixed loans then to do that. And so that was basically part of our strategy, was to get the two homes to, and then after we had been approved for those mortgages, basically take on more debt. If we would have taken on more debt at the onset, it would have basically, we would have been just basically getting one nice home and wouldn't have been able to get a second one. So the renovation was part of the strategy. I've obviously heard horror stories about people renovating, and ours wasn't necessarily a horror story, but it was, I mean, it's a big project. It kind of defines how you live your life while the renovation is happening. And especially for us, I mean, we were in Boulder at first trying to renovate Breckenridge. That one I more like GC'd. I'm not like a big DIY person, but I GC'd that one where I was like, you know, getting quotes from the subs and being up there to like oversee their work and stuff like that, and doing small things like unloading materials and moving them around and stuff like that, which I actually am experienced at. That was my job in high school, was basically being a grunt on a construction site. But yeah, we renovated Breckenridge. I was like more involved in that than I wanted to be. The first year we had Breckenridge, I skied 10 days and I was like renovating like 30+ days. And I was like, that's the wrong ratio. Like the whole point of this is to be having fun, not to be working. So we've basically flipped that for Breckenridge, where now it's just a few days a year of doing home maintenance and then most of the time just having fun. But then anyway, so then we started renovating Boulder, and that time I was like, we need just like a full-fledged general contractor for this one, because I'm not going to do it the same way we did that. And that's a bit more of an extensive renovation too. But we got that one all renovated and moved into it, and then there was like a lot of lingering stuff, but now it's been probably close to a year and we've just been living in it and enjoying it. So
the Breckenridge one, I guess I didn't realize that you had renovated it. I've been to it. It's beautiful. What specifically did you have to do to that house?
It was built in 1995 and hadn't been updated at all. So it was like floral wallpaper, which you can tell having been there, like that's not the style. It's like kind of like a cabin style house. So, you know, 1990s Midwest-tastic floral wallpaper wasn't really fitting. And the guy we bought it from the original owner, and he had done all the work himself and he did it like perfectly. So like getting the wallpaper off the wall was like incredibly difficult apparently. And then we put in those tongue and groove ceilings that are in like the bedrooms. It was in the great room already, and we were like, oh, this looks so cool. We found like an awesome carpenter who had trained with like the guys who do this old house, and I'm super happy with how that turned out. Now, all the walls were white. It had white carpets everywhere. Every room that didn't have plumbing had white carpets. Being up in the mountains, white carpets are extremely not practical. So yeah, put in the new carpet, but and then put in the hardwood floor in the great room area and on the stairs. So, and then we added like 11 windows. So if you go in there now, it's like there's tons of windows everywhere, tons of natural light. But yeah, a few of the rooms we said they felt like terrorist holding cells, because it was white walls, white carpet, and like a tiny little window. So,
wow. Was it difficult to, it's difficult to find people in many places, like even in around here, we're not in the mountains where there's more labor. Was it difficult to find people to work on the house up in Breckenridge?
It was, but then we got really lucky and we found this little like crew that they all live in Alma and know each other, and they were like super solid guys and very interesting as well. They're like basically all semi like financially independent, because they've lived in the mountains for like 20+ years and bought houses and, you know, and renovated them and made a lot of money that way. Obviously, like Breckenridge real estate has been an amazing trajectory over the past 20 years. So like one of the guys, I'm way off on a tangent, but I do think this is interesting. But one of the guys, he would be there in the summer and he would do log work. And then in the winter, he had a brewery, microbrewery in Costa Rica. And he'd go live in Costa Rica and like brew craft beer there. And I was like, this is an awesome job, like an awesome life. And then our painter did the same thing where he would work like, I mean, he worked like 16-hour days. He like literally slept at our place. And I was like, he asked. I was like, yeah, it's fine if you sleep at our place. Like, go for it. And then same thing, once winter hit, he had a place in Baja, California, and he'd go surf like all winter because he was like kind of over being cold in the winter in Breckenridge. So I was like, these are cool guys. And then they would just, I'd be like, do you know anyone who does woodwork? And they're like, oh yeah, you should talk to Mike. He's my neighbor. And they'd all show up. They were like super skilled. They work super hard. And then they'd go have fun during the winter, essentially.
So I'm curious. I want to wrap this up by talking about the financial part of it. Because a lot of us, when we're getting to FI, we're obsessed with money. And then we're doing these very luxurious products now. I'm not even sure how to phrase it. How does money factor into it? When you went into these houses, did you, like when I did my fix and flips, I always had the end number in mind. Okay, we're going to buy this thing for this much and I'm going to be able to sell it for this much at the end. How much, did you think of any of that when you did either of these renovations, or is this purely for joy and happiness?
I did. And then you and Mindy were on Ramit's podcast and I tried to loosen up or try to think about it a little differently. But yeah, when I started out with Breckenridge, I was like so laser focused on like the return on investment. And I think we ended up probably like adding a little bit more value than dollar wise what we put into those renovations. And then I was like, you know, what's the actual point of this? And the stock market was doing super well. And when we went into Boulder, we kind of went in with that attitude a little bit. But then by the end, I was kind of like, no, I'm like, we're already struggling to spend our 4% that we're supposed to spend each year. This is like a chance to splurge. Like, this is something we actually value that we want to spend money on. Might as well take advantage of this opportunity. So we did spend much more money than would have been a sound decision if we were like flipping the house or anything like that. But what we began to realize is this is a house that we're going to live in, hopefully for like forever. And also being early retired, we're spending a ton of time like at our house. We're actually able to enjoy it, unlike when we were working and just basically coming home to sleep. So it was like, this is a strategic way to actually spend some money. And I was like, I was even like, oh, if we're even like worst case scenario, $500,000 down, what does that mean in terms of the 4% rule? That's like $20,000 less to spend each year. And it's like, well, we're already struggling to spend that much money. So let's go ahead and spend the extra money on the house now, because this is like the one thing we could think of that would actually be a big ticket item that we want to spend money on. So
yeah, it's so interesting. I'll say one more thing real quick, Doug, or do you want to chime in here? Okay. Yeah, for us, we bought this house, we tore down, we bought it for $500,000. We put $50,000 into renovating it to turn it into a rental. So that was $550,000. And I imagine the build of cost is like $800,000. So now we're up to like $1.35 million, which is a lot of money. And I don't think we'd be able to sell it for that much at the end. It's so nice to not care anymore. And I think you and I, like the house, the structure we live in is pretty important to us. I know some people like Brad Barrett talks about how he just rents a townhouse because he does not give a shit. But I give a deep shit about that.
A huge one.
I hope my new smart toilet can accommodate that. And I guess it'll tell me, like it talks to me, so it'll tell me if I need more fiber in my diet or if I've been to Taco Bell too much. But it's pretty cool to know the things that light you up and be able to spend money. And I don't want to say carefree, but not lose sleep over it, I guess. It took me a long time to get to that spot in life. Like, I still look at prices like at restaurants and stuff. I think I've moved far away from it, but I'm not even sure how I arrived at that point. Doug, I'm curious to hear your take on this, because not super luxurious, but I'm looking at your nice guitars. Like, do you struggle with purchases or anything like that?
A little bit. And we'll put a pin in that and come back to it, because that's a whole other big thing. But like, one observation where you were thinking, Rusty, about like the ROI, and you're like conscious of the amount, because it was it's a lot of money that you guys are talking about. And it's like, we're figuring out and struggling how to like convert the ROI from like a tangible dollar amount to like enjoyment on a day-to-day basis, which is like kind of unquantifiable and fuzzy. And it's like, if you walk into your kitchen and you have like your knives where you want them, you have a good like area to work, like that's a great thing versus if something's kind of in the wrong place or you don't have enough room or it feels a little crowded or whatever. But it's really hard to like make that calculation and then be comfortable with like, okay, the heated flooring is going to cost like a crazy amount and you're going to have, I mean, you put that system in yourself, right?
Yes.
So it's like, and then it'll take a bunch of time and you're going to run into issues and whatever. So it's pretty tough, but I think like we're getting to the point where we're figuring out like, hey, it's not a direct ROI. It's like right. when I pick up the guitar, it feels really good. Very few people are going to hear me play it, but like when I'm playing it, it feels pretty good.
And that's why you should be doing it for yourself and not for anyone else too.
Yeah. And also for like the way it sounds.
Part of it too, like, I mean, yeah, exactly. You're trying to not just maximize the dollars. You're trying to maximize, like, yeah, the goal is to live like a happy, like life. And so, or a happy, fulfilled life. So yeah, that's what you should try to be maximizing with some of these decisions. And part of it too was like with our Boulder house, it was, so I read this like study where it's like basically anyone who has a house over 2,000 square feet like is less happy with their house because of the extra maintenance essentially than people who live in houses under 2,000 square feet. And ours started out at like, it was like 1983 square feet, so just under, and we were adding like a tiny bit onto it and it ended up being like 2,215 square feet. And I was like, we're over the 2,000 magic number. But like in contrast, if we would have spent the same amount of money and we would have added just like 1,500 square feet, we would have had a way better return. But then I think we would have been way less happy with our house. So it's like, it's a complicated decision because it's like, well, with the extra money, could we have used that to make ourselves happier? But I mean, ultimately I was like, hey, let's get the house, like the house that we want. Yeah. And we were conscious about like, hey, we're actively making this decision to not go bigger, even though that will greatly diminish our returns. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you decide on the size and will the square footage be at the new place?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because it doesn't cost that much more to do a basement. So when I tell you the total square feet, it might sound excessive. The above grade square footage is like, I think it's right around 1800, and the basement is slightly smaller finished square footage, but we just decided to do the basement because you got to do that excavation and stuff anyway, and it didn't add that much cost. But it's not, I don't think it's ostentatious. Like the main floor is three bedrooms, three bathrooms, and just like one big family room, living room, kitchen area, kind of like your house actually, Doug, because I want as much house as I need and no more. I think it's kind of silly that like all these houses built in the 80s have a separate living room and family room. Like, what am I going to do with those two separate rooms? We once owned a house that had like a massive master bedroom. It was huge. I'm like, most of the time when I'm in this room, I'm unconscious. I'm asleep. This is such a waste of space. So our bedrooms aren't very big. We probably have excessive bathrooms in the house. I need those, as we talked about before. So it'll be about 3,000 square feet with the basement.
Okay.
But you designed it like, this is something we've talked about before, but you kind of like designed it like the top floor is kind of like what you designed. And then the basement was just kind of like, you could add that on for not too much more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we are going to finish the basement and do stuff like that. Like I don't like a TV in my main living area, so we'll relegate that to the basement. If we want to watch a football game, if we have guests staying over, that'll be in the basement too. So yeah, I don't think it's too crazy compared to a lot of other houses in the area.
And it's right around the same square footage here. Basement's a little smaller. I think it's maybe like 800 or 900 unfinished. And it would be nice to have a bathroom down here. But other than that, it's like, I mean, I play guitar and like we record this down here, but yeah, upstairs super similar size, like 1800 square feet. And I guess we could kind of move into it, but downsizing. So Carl, your family's getting, well, it's not getting smaller, people are moving out, your daughters are moving away,
hopefully
flying the nest, hopefully, so you don't need as much space, and that makes sense. There's more maintenance, just like we've discussed. And Elizabeth has mentioned like, oh, this is too big. And I'm like, ah, we have literally out of these 200 houses in the neighborhood, this is the smallest floor plan that you can get. Yeah. It's the smallest like new home that you can get. Cause I mean, the alternative is like a starter home. A lot of times the materials aren't as good. And like, I mean, we've lived in a couple starter homes, so it's just, it's not as good. And maybe it's a little, it's like noisier because it's not insulated as well. And a couple other things like that. So we've kind of been having a little early debate on that, but it does make sense to like downsize. And it's something that people with families would experience when their kids head off. So I don't know. We're still working on it, but I'm like, I think this is a decent size. There's a little space. If we have a guest, Elizabeth has a room upstairs where she can sit at a desk and do some things. It's like everyone has a little space, but not too much. So
I think it's particularly hard in Colorado too, because I think Colorado has the largest average home size in the country. So
really?
Finding a house much smaller than this, and especially like new ones, they aren't even like building them much smaller than this anymore. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's like over 2,200 square feet is the average home size in Colorado. I was kind of surprised when we were looking too for similar reasons. It's like, oh, you actually can't even find, like, especially if you want something that's like nice and finished, you can't find something much smaller than this. So
interesting.
If you downsized, you'd probably have to pay about the same. I know this house is appreciated a lot, so you'd probably sell this and you'd have to put all that money back into, even if it's a smaller house, you'd probably have to put all that money back into it, right? Like, unless you buy like one of those, they've got those Wii homes over here right by you that are like 800 or 900 square feet. I think that'd be a recipe for a marital strife.
Yeah. We looked at those because they were like 100K cheaper. Yeah. It's just it's a little too small. We maybe could do better. Like we were both working more during that time frame. And it was more important, but now like maybe not. Anyway, it's one of those things. And to your point, yeah, if we'd have to get like a super small place to like make it cheaper. So it's like move from a comfortable place to a less comfortable place and then pay more. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
Man, I'd also consider like your neighbors and how happy you are in this specific area. Like I lived next to awful people, like the alcoholic who would come out in his underwear and scream and yell, like, yeah. Trading a known entity for an unknown. It's always give me anxiety, but maybe I've had bad luck with the people live around.
Doug lives next to a bunch of people who are bloodthirsty to murder prairie dogs. So,
oh man. Yeah. Yeah.
Not to reopen a subject there.
No, it's all set. There's an episode coming out soon, Carl. So you could check that out. But yeah, Rusty and I talked about the whole prairie dog saga, philosophy, ethics, and stuff like that. We got deep. Right.
Cool.
Yeah, I think the economics right now with the interest rates changing is like it's hard. My parents looked at downsizing recently. They're in Iowa, and I mean they were going to have to basically buy a house that was half the price of what their current home was to like barely be saving like or be paying 20% less on their mortgage payment. So I think, yeah, it's a really tricky time. And they had refinanced a few years ago and locked in a low rate on a 30-year mortgage. So when when rates are more like 6% or whatever they are right now, you're like giving up a lot of square footage. And then the other thing is like my parents like their current house. You know, it's all set up the way that they want it. They've had it for over 20 years, I guess. Yeah, like 23 years or so, and they've put in the curtains that they want and they have the furniture that is like the right size for each room and everything like that. I was like, do you guys really want to downsize? And they're like, well, we really aren't using like three of the bedrooms. And I was like, yeah, but also like you'd be taking on a whole like renovation and redecorating the house and things like that. And they're like, yeah, that doesn't actually sound like that much fun. And I was like, and you wouldn't actually be saving money. I was like, especially if you're going to start doing like those sorts of renovations, like putting in curtains, you're not going to be adding value. So it's like, you'll actually be costing you money and you won't be saving that much on the mortgage payment. So I think they're going to stay put, but yeah, I think that's part of it. The downsizing discussion is a little weird right now because of the lower interest rates that people have locked in with their mortgages.
Yep. Yeah. And that's exactly us. And I mean, it makes me think about, like you said, your parents were in that home for like 20 years. My dad's been in the house that I grew up in for like, 35 years. And obviously there's maintenance and like there's some costs that come up, but known entity with the neighbors and all that stuff. But it's interesting to think about like how long you may live in a place. And I guess it's like what stage of life, like it sounds like you know that you're probably going to be in that home for a while. So you're like, let's get this right the first time around versus like we lived in Bozeman. We bought it was a starter home. It was a town home, but it only shared one wall. There were only like four homes that were like that. So it was very, very small in a normal neighborhood. Again, the smallest one for like a couple miles or something. It was very tiny, but we didn't know how long we were going to live there. So how do you guys think about that? Because obviously there could be some life change where you're like, hey, we're going to move. But Carl, you moving down the street, like you bought a house that was like, you could almost see it from your, you know, driveway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you think about that?
Like how long we'll stay or that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Well, Mindy and I say that we'll stay in this one we're building forever. It's a ranch home, so we don't have to use stairs if we don't want to. It's accessible. It'll be like wheelchair accessible if one of us gets incapacitated somehow. So we plan to stay there forever. But the other thought I've had is we've said that with a lot of homes in the past, and then we end up staying there for 5 or 7 years and we move on. So open to whatever. I don't really care if we built this crazy thing and moved out in 7 years. I wouldn't look at it as a failure. Just be flexible and roll with whatever life throws at you. But our intention is kind of like Rusty to stay in there for the long term. We like our neighbors. We like the location. So that is the plan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Carl said, our plan when we were doing this is we never want to move. Obviously, like life circumstances or economic circumstances might have different ideas in mind. But yeah, we're not going to move. And especially having like done all the renovation work, we're like really invested, like mentally invested in the house now, where it's like we went through a lot to have this house. So we don't take that lightly. In contrast, like every home that's been renovated in our house, in our neighborhood recently has been like sold. I was like, why would you put yourself mm-hmm. through that to sell it within a year or two?
Interesting. Yeah. Do you know where the people are going?
Well, I think they have like Boulder's super techie, and I think they have like tech jobs. And then, so I think they're kind of forced into moving. But I wouldn't have, if that was even a possibility, I don't think I would have taken on like a full on like gut renovation the way that we did.
Got it. All right. We have a little note on townhomes and condos and apartments. And I think like going back to like what we kind of talked about with our house here, I think potentially because of the interest rates, like we would go to a rental situation, most likely in an apartment, which doesn't sound great, but I know there's nicer apartments that you can move into. But yeah, at this point, I'm like, these amps are super fucking loud. So it's like, I can't even play when Elizabeth is like in the house at all. Cause it's just like, even if it's quiet, like you could hear it everywhere. And if I turn it up, I mean, you just can't do that in an apartment. So definitely some downsides. Yeah. Any thoughts on that level of housing?
It terrifies me just because I've lived by some horrible people. The neighbors, this has actually happened to me twice, but the most recent one is the neighbors in back of us had like a million dogs, and dogs are fine, but they were awful dog owners because they would go away on vacation, put a bunch of food in the backyard, stick the dogs in the backyard and take off. Yeah. So you've got like German shepherds barking their asses off at like 3 a.m. I went out there with like a decibel meter and like it's like equivalent to a vacuum cleaner. And even though we had high quality windows, this would keep us up. And that actually happened in a previous house too. These people go on vacation, stick all their dogs in the backyard and take off. And then the dogs bark nonstop. So I do my best to not be around people in general, or at least known entities or real solid concrete construction, where if they are insane, I don't have to hear it above or below me.
Mm-hmm. There's that Seinfeld episode where like Kramer has a deli slicer and Elaine has a barking dog next to her. And then Kramer like deli slices meat really thin and they put the like sedatives in it and like slide it under the door. I was like, that could have been you with the German shepherds and take out some like raw meat with like some oxycodone in there and drop it over the fence.
Here you go, doggy, be happy.
Yeah. with renting, we rented most of our lives. We were like big proponents of renting, especially when I listen to like Ramit's show, he like is always going on about how he rents. And that sounds very similar to how we used to think about it a lot. I did see recently, we were in Chicago, and I did see recently Chicago had like the lowest property appreciation in the country out of major cities over the past 20 years. I think over like the past 20 years, the home prices have only gone up like 40%. So, which is good for like affordability living there.
Right.
Standpoint, but bad from a home ownership standpoint. And so, yeah, for us, it was like just like always such a better financial decision to be renting. And then we always lived in professionally managed buildings. So we had a full-time maintenance team. And it was like basically anytime anything went wrong, you just send them an email and then they're up there within like almost always within 24 hours and they just fix it right away. It's like even like our dishwasher broke and they just brought up a new dishwasher like the next day and installed it. I was like, this is about as close to a zero maintenance lifestyle as you could possibly get. So those aspects of it were nice. But yeah, now having more space, having like a yard, especially having a kid, having a yard, and just the fact that we're home more frequently. I think if we went back to living in a 700 square foot apartment with the current setup with a kid, it would be a different experience than, you know, when we were both working and stuff like that. But
and I think in a big city, you have a lot more options for, I guess, just like the level of luxury of the apartment. Where around here, I mean, I think we live very close to the apartments that we checked out for 1 year while we moved to Longmont. And I think those are like some of the nicer ones in the whole town. I'm not 100% sure, but it was like brand new when we moved in, really nice gym, and just generally like it was a good place to stay. But yeah, there's just not as many options versus like if you're in a bigger city, there might be like a nice like luxury high rise kind of thing sort of. And I suspect you were in a spot kind of like that. Or
we weren't like luxury, but our building was like 40 years old. But it was all owned by one owner, and they had a full-time maintenance staff and things like that. But they had a gym, they had like a rooftop pool. It was like 44th floor rooftop pool. So nice. There were nice things about it, but it wasn't, I mean, it was still all those like builder grade finishes on the inside. They did make us move out at one point, and then they renovated our unit and we moved back in, and they gave us like granite countertops and stuff like that. So
nice. Yeah. All right. As we wrap up here, we'll talk briefly about second homes. We have low interest in having a second home. Like I mentioned, like we're thinking about downsizing. So adding more to that,
you might not even have a home.
I mean, I think I have the ideal situation, and that's to make friends with people that do have a second home. So Rusty, and then Carl might be getting one. So it's just like perfect. Have a friend with a boat. Don't buy a fucking boat. Right. So yeah, Carl, I'll kick it to you first. Cause like we've debated and you're like, maybe the mountains sometime. So what are you thinking? I mean, you're going to potentially get a second home.
Yeah. And I like the way you phrased it. Second home, you did not say vacation home, because a vacation home to me implies something that you're going to be at for maybe two or three weeks of the year, because you have a full-time job and you can only go up there during certain times. I love being in the mountains, especially in the summertime when it's hot down here, and in the wintertime. I love snow sports. So I think we'll probably definitely pull the trigger on that. Maybe this summer, probably be something we live at half time. And Rusty is kind of the inspiration for this, because I saw what he was doing with his house and just letting friends use it. And I thought that was super awesome, kind and generous. And I think that's what we'll do too. We don't need any more money, so why deal with the hassle of renting? We'll just let friends use it. We'll probably get a place with an ADU too, maybe, or build one. So we can just invite random people up there while we're there, or just have people use it when we're not there, whichever. The other thing I'll say about this, it is a huge expense. We could just Airbnb, but it's an experiment. If after a year or two of doing this, we decide we don't like it, we could just turn around and sell it and be done with it. So yeah, I would phrase it more as an experiment right now, but I think it's an experiment we'll pull the trigger on within 6 months to a year.
And we have a good data point.
So the home. One question for Carl. Is 6 months, is that when you're anticipating being done with the current project?
Yeah, the current one should be done in like probably 4 or 5 months, and then we'll start casually looking in the mountains, but be ready to pull the trigger when we find something. And yeah, got to make sure everything is all set up with the current house before we tackle anything else.
Yeah. So we, as I mentioned earlier, we have the place in Breckenridge, and it is truly like a second home. We're up there, not every year, but we're up there about 5 months out of the year. So it's like 5 months in Breckenridge, 6 months in Boulder, and then like a month of travel. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a lot of extra maintenance. I mean, especially going from like the 700 square foot apartment with a professional maintenance team to, you know, owning two homes. And then in the mountains, there's just, you know, in Breckenridge, it's 6 months of winter. There's like a lot of snow. So it takes a toll on the house. So there's always like some repair to be done in the spring, or I guess more like the summer when the snow finally melts in Breckenridge. But because we're up there so much, yeah, we feel like it totally is worth it.
Yeah. And I think especially, are you looking in that vicinity, Frisco, Breck area?
Yeah, we're considering that. We like the Slida area, maybe even Steamboat. These mountain towns have gotten super pricey. We had a I wish we could have done this, but we were looking at Breckenridge property like around 2009, 2010 when the economy was taking a dump, and there were such good deals. It hurts me to this day because I knew at the time if we pull the trigger on these, like $250,000 for a townhouse in downtown Breckenridge, we didn't have any money and no one would give it to us. So there went that. So we'll probably have to pay 8x what we could have paid back then, but yeah. Oh well, it'll be
fine. The two best times to plant a tree, Carl. 20 years ago and today.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. I was going to say we ended up not doing it last summer, but just like knowing that, you know, you guys are up there, Rusty, we were like, oh, we could rent a place like in the vicinity and hang out all the time. And like, if you guys get a place, like it totally makes sense to like rent a spot for us, you know, 4 to 6 weeks would be great. Get out of the heat. And then there'd be like stuff going on. Like we've talked about that before, where it's just like another little community, like right there, we can meet at the reservoir and like go around and whatever.
Yeah, that'd be like the dream. If like the Front Range 5 community all like migrates up to the mountains for like 6 weeks in the summer and chills out, and that'd be super fun.
All right. I think we covered everything we needed to, everything on the list, and I'm starting to smell the chicken upstairs. So anything else from you, Rusty?
No.
And Carl?
I'm wondering why you have these creepy hands. Were these connected to your inflatable doll and they fell off or something like that? They don't. Yeah. High five.
All right. For the people that are only listening, I have small novelty hands, just a little plastic one. So yeah, you know, if you're curious, you could check it out over on the YouTube channel. But thanks, Carl, for coming in.
Hold on. Yeah, you're going to want to watch YouTube to see what, or maybe not. Can they see that? Ooh, right there, down a little bit.
All right. We had such a really good episode. We made it super creepy at the end, which is the only way to do it. So thanks for popping in, Carl. Hopefully you can come in once a quarter, which I think we've actually been pretty close to doing those. So thank you.
Yeah. Is there an NC-17 rating for podcasts? If it devolves from here, I know there's mature audiences, which is R, but what happens? Can we take it beyond that? I don't know what we would do, and I actually don't think I want to go there, but
there's only one way to find out, Carl.
asking for a friend.
Yeah. So just go to milehighfi.com/onlyfans if you want to check out this episode thing. We're kicking around an idea. It's Mile High Fi After Dark.
Nice.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Fi podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. quick disclaimer. This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Carl, you just had a birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Carl.
Thank you both. Yeah. And thank you for not coming either. Yep. Not that I'm hurt at all or anything like that. I know you guys both had other obligations. Doug, you had to like change your pillowcases. And Rusty, I think you had to like rearrange your sock drawer. But it's okay.
Yeah. It was. Yeah,
you like, can't put those things off.
It was fine. Like we didn't have plans, but then we were like, hey, do you want to do something? So we ended up hanging out instead. But unfortunately, yeah, we missed out. You had a big time caterer. I think you had to call in some favors to be able to get the folks to come out. And also an awesome dessert, which it's one of my favorite, I think, styles of desserts, but this is something a little more special, hard to get. So tell us a little bit about the party.
Ooh. You know what? I have to back up and talk about the dessert because that's kind of the genesis of this whole thing. So you know I love Taco Bell. And some years ago, like Taco Bell released a tweet or some kind of social media thing that said, we're going to make a pie out of our Baja Blast drink. And everyone thought it was a joke. And then it never appeared. So people just assumed this whole thing was a joke. So then 2 years later, like a month ago, they announced, hey, we're going to produce this thing. It's an actual product you can go and buy. Each store is only going to have 20 of them, so go get it now. So I happened to be out of town at the time, so I called up Mindy. I'm like, hey, Taco Bell has this thing. Can you go get it? She groaned. She's like, yeah, I guess. Next time I pass by, I'll go get it. So one funny thing is she went in there to buy it, and she's like, you know, I'm looking to buy the Baja Blast Pie. And the person behind the counter was like, really? She's like, yeah, my husband wants it. So I'm like, what am I going to do with this abomination? It's this fluorescent green blue thing. I'm like, I actually do want to try this thing. I'm obsessed with Taco Bell and shitty food. I have no standards when it comes to food. So I really do want to put this thing in my mouth, but not the whole thing. Like, how could I recruit a bunch of people to eat this thing? And my birthday was coming up. So I'll plan a birthday around this and then I'll get other people to eat it, which kind of backfired because most people didn't want to touch the nuclear really? Radioactive green stuff. Yeah, we finished about 3/4 of it, which isn't bad. I guess I had some left over to take home. So we did that. I thought having Taco Bell cater the thing would be a little bit over the top since I was already going with the Taco Bell pie and I actually wanted people to show up. So I had Chipotle cater it. And yeah, it was great. You both missed an awesome time. We had a performing clown, a guy in a purple gorilla costume, the divers like at Casa Bonita downtown. It was awesome.
Is that for real? That sounds like it's made up.
No, it's all for real. Yes, it's all for real. We had someone come out of a cake. It was awesome.
I don't know what's real. Yeah.
the pie and Chipotle are real. Everything okay. else is fake.
What was people's reaction to the pie?
I think most people were pretty disgusted by it, but I didn't think it was kind of like a key lime pie that was tweaked with. It didn't taste like the Baja Blast drink at Taco Bell, if you've had that. So it tasted like a key lime pie that was off. But I don't know. I think it's like, I equate this to Skyline Chili. So people go there, Doug, and we've been there before. I think we both enjoyed it. If you go into Skyline Chili expecting to eat normal chili, you're going to be disgusted because it's going to be much different from your expectations. So I think the people who said they disliked it didn't go in there with an open mind, or the people who professed strong hatred for it. I'm like, I think I had said it. It was probably my fault too, because I'm like, it's like a key lime pie, and then it actually wasn't.
Yeah. It's so. Like its own thing. Yeah, just treat it like its own thing. Like treat Skyline Chili like its own thing. Don't treat it like chili. Yeah, and you can enjoy it.
Yeah. But I'm sorry that my kids ate the rest of it, or else I would have brought some here today. But I'll see if I can procure another one, and then we can record again and taste it, like
figure it out
live on air.
Yes,
get our real time reactions.
Yeah.
Well, I like one thing I've been doing. Is like serving lunch to folks that come over to record. It's just been you, Rusty, just a couple of people. But we're having like Mexican up there or upstairs. And I could call Elizabeth and be like, stop by Taco Bell. We need to get this Baja Blaster. Or what is it called?
Baja Blast Pie.
Okay.
You're close.
It sounds pretty good. And you were talking about Taco Bell, which we eat crappy fast food on road trips. So we did stop by a Taco Bell because sometimes like you're in the middle of Kansas and there's not many places to go. And Taco Bell's fine. Like I think if you brought it in and like relabeled it and you're like, oh, there's a new place that opened up over here. It's kind of a boutique-y place. People would be like, oh, it's really good. Like it seems like street tacos or something like that. It's all about the packaging. They just think Taco Bell's not good.
Yeah, it's all perception, and they know there's probably a lot of unnatural stuff going on in there, so people dismiss it for that. But yeah, in pure taste, I mean, I think it's fine.
Yeah. What do you think?
I would have to give another try. No, I used to be a big fan. It was like my go-to fast food when I was, I'm sure it's good. And then I had to, I've mentioned it to you guys, but I had to defend Taco Bell in a lawsuit when it was claimed that their food wasn't real food. And so I got to really like dig into the nuts and bolts of what it's made out of. And I was like, it's actually not as bad as the hate that they get. I mean, that's someone who was paid to defend them. So I'm a biased opinion, but it's like, they made a big deal about their beef. Not like if it's like a beefy taco instead of a beef taco, but the thing that they added at the time was soy, which I don't think soy is like bad for you. You know, it's like basically like adding a little tofu into the meat. So I was like, that's still food, you know, but yeah.
And they do have sort of like the better version of some of this stuff. So they had, what I tried this time was the quesadilla. So they have the normal quesadilla, but then they have, I think it was like the Baja, probably not Baja, but it was like something, we'll call it Baja chicken quesadilla. And it was like a little bit better. And it had like, I assume, real chicken meat in this case, but it was pretty good. Of course, I was like driving all day and hungry, but the right place, right time. It's pretty good.
Maybe Taco Bell will sponsor the podcast. If anyone from Taco Bell is listening, please reach out to, what's our email address?
We accept payment in the form of Baja Blast pies.
They'll send me a year's worth.
100 of them in the garage.